the two of them would go on to found Apple Computer, and the rest, as they say, is history. After leaving Apple, he went on to become a cultural icon and a passionate philanthropist devoted to passing on his passions in mathematics and electronics to grade school students and their teachers. And in the process, changed the lives of many students for the better. He has also received the highest honor bestowed on America's leading innovators, the National Medal of Technology, and was inducted into the Innovators Hall of Fame. It goes without saying that we are honored to have him here. We're also thrilled that our own IBM fellow and chief innovator, Grady Boosh, is also here with him. So please welcome Grady Boosh and Steve Wozniak.
Good to talk with you here in the Windy City.
Likewise, you have the coolest watch. Tell us about this thing.
Well, I like to grab unusual geek gadgets, so this watch is one of them. Little old Nixie tubes made 40 years ago, and they were made for calculators before LEDs, and when I turn my wrist, hours and minutes get displayed. And it's the coolest watch in the world.
It works in the bathtub.
But I don't wear it because it's geeky and unusual. I was going to wear it for 1 week, show it to my gadget friends, go back to my beautiful watch with beautiful hands and dial and all that, and I put it on, and my head is more pleasant. I like the same thing with computers.
Yeah.
Whenever I use something, it seems to be just natural way I think. 954, it's the way I would speak.
Sweet, sweet.
My brain does less work, and that's what computers are supposed to do for us.
You do so many innovative things like that. You were telling me a story backstage of the time in Vegas and the floppy disk and Steve. So those three stories come together. Tell us
everything. Oh, the floppy disk. Okay, well, we came out with our Apple II computer long, long ago, and it had stored programs on cassette tape. You put it in your cassette tape reader, read it in for a minute, beep, got a program. So we were in a staff meeting, and the first time ever they were going to allow personal computers in the CES show in Las Vegas, the City of Lights. And our marketing guy, Mike Marklow, was going to go, and our sales guy, Gene Carter, and Steve Jobs. And I was way too shy to ever say, oh, will you pay my way to Vegas? I want to see what the city looks like. So instead I said, if we have a floppy disk in 2 weeks, can we show it? And Mike Barclay says, yes. And oh my gosh, I've never worked with a disk drive in my life. I've never studied them. I've never done anything with a disk operating system. But I knew that if in 2 weeks I developed some hardware that could write data on a disk and read it back and you could type run checkbook and it would run a program, I get to go to Vegas. And motivation. They talk about extrinsic motivation, which is your salary, your grades in school, the things that people can see, your prestige, your awards, your title. And those are motivating factors, but really when it's internal in your own brain, the intrinsic motivation factors, that the personal ones, you have a personal reason, that drives you. Boy, I work day and night, every day, including Christmas and New Year's. We wound up 6 in the morning in the convention center here in Las Vegas. I've got that thing working, run checkbook.
I understand the other event that happened while you were in Las Vegas is you also taught Steve craps.
Yeah, that's true. Taught Steve Jobs how to play craps here. He was younger, so he didn't know how, and I did. But I also taught Randy Wigginton, a little 17-year-old programmer, how to play. He won $35 going down the strip in the older days when it was like casino to casino, really,
you know, walk to. Sweet. So let's see. You're a professional dancer. You're a rock star concert promoter. You're a writer of books. You did something in the personal computer industry, I understand. I'm not sure I haven't read about that yet. What are you the most proud of?
Well, oh gosh, in my life, most proud of? Believe it or not, my my true, honest graduation day was the proudest day of my life. I gotta say that.
Graduation of?
I mean, my wife is very, very important, most important thing, but I'm very lucky. No, I am. Sometimes you are so lucky you know it. My proud day was actually getting a real diploma. I went back, after Apple was successful, I thought, you know, after a plane crash, I thought, you know, I would have got a college degree if Apple hadn't happened. Do I now become a different person with all this wealth and managing projects and improving the wealth? Or do I be myself? And I decided to go, I was very strong internal core values.
Education is very important to you because you You've been a teacher for many things. You support a lot of kids.
Yeah.
Why is education so important to you?
Well, I decided when I was young, my father taught me the importance of education was where we were going to get to in life.
Yeah.
And I just always had this ideal to go back and be a fifth grade teacher, like a teacher I had loved so much in fifth grade. And I told my dad that I wanted to be an engineer first and a fifth grade teacher second. So I went back and I taught fifth grade for 8 years, secret, no press. So, and this was after Apple, but it was something I wanted to do. I wanted to have personal contact with individual young students and help them in some way.
Are you still?
I like that better than writing a book for a million.
Sweet. Are you still in touch with some of the kids you taught?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Quite a few.
Cool.
They're past college now.
So, what would you say to somebody young wanting to come into the industry? What advice would you give them?
One, got to feel that inside this is where you want to be. But usually they've come to me because inside they want some connection to it. And they usually are missing tools of knowledge. They think you have to be given knowledge and find it other places. And I say you've got to go out and do your own, build your own projects. Find little things that force you to think out solutions, learn how to construct. And you've got to get to a stage that you don't necessarily get all the answers that's from what somebody has done before you. You can think out your new answers that are better, and then develop your skills. I mean, go online. There's a million places to get the basics elements and understand what the components we are to build our technology out of, and then start piecing it together. Try a few programs, and the ones that are really motivating or fun, that you're going to show off to some friends, and they'll be very tiny at first, almost useless, and eventually you'll get up to something kind of useful seeming, and you'll show it off and be proud, you know, and it's a way of boasting, it's a way of being proud of yourself.
In fact, that's...
And the motivation's got to be internal.
Yeah.
And you know what, it's okay to hang out in school, and then work on your own things on the side that you really want to do in life, and it's okay to have a job, working for the man, you know, 9 to 5, even though you want to work on some other projects that aren't being made yet. And I mean, the Apple computers, I mean, I offered it to Hewlett Packard, 5 times they turned me down. I wanted my company to build it. They would have done it wrong, but.
Did you ever offer it to IBM?
No, we didn't offer it to IBM, but boy, when we started, we were, you know, we hadn't even sold an Apple II. We're kind of trying to get into production, maybe 4 months, 5 months away. And Steve Jobs is sitting in there, and he just always was so panicky. We've got to move faster than anybody else, and we've got to be, IBM is going to be outdoing us very soon. They're going to be, you know, cutting us off because we're little cheap guys. And Mike Markula, our funder, who had a lot of experience at Intel and stock options, he said, no, we have a group of smart people. They have a group of smart people. As long as we can, you know, basically compete product-wise and create as much, we'll hold our market share.
Right.
But it was kind of noble that IBM got into personal computers so early. That was really respectable.
So you think the duality of the PC versus the Apple computer was a good thing for the industry?
I don't necessarily think about it. I think that... There were a lot of problems. First of all, IBM had the marketing prowess to sell the PCs. The company might buy 2 PCs. They might buy, you know, 2 Apple IIs, 3 of them. And then here comes the PC, and around the time companies are buying 500, 1,000, 2,000 machines, and they've already got the easy purchase order methods for IBM. They know all the reps and whatever. So the marketing advantage, IBM really took to thunder when the market started moving from games into like business software.
Right. And speaking of games, your use of BASIC was because of games, as I recall, the reason you developed a BASIC interpreter.
Well, all I knew was when you're struggling with no money, Steve and I had no money. We had we were young, in our young 20s. We had no savings accounts. We had no friends or relatives that could loan us money. So you have to think out. You have to build an entire project all on your own. And Bill Gates had written a BASIC for the Intel chips. And I had chosen a cheaper microprocessor, the 6502, and I said, I need a BASIC. You have to have a BASIC. And the BASIC would be the key, and I wanted to do 2 things. I wanted to do productive work. Now, all I knew about computers, I didn't know how they run financial programs and all, because I'm not financial. But in my design work on Hewlett-Packard scientific calculators, I would have to run simulations on a bigger computer. I want to be able to run my HP simulations, and I also want to play games. Computer games were new, they were unknown, they were text only back then, and they were just, I had seen a few, and they were just a highlight. So you have to have games, and I called my BASIC Game BASIC. If you go back in all my handwritten notes, it's always Game BASIC, and I just had to write it. I had never taken a course in writing a language, but I claim I have an MIT education in it. because a friend at MIT had sent me some Xerox copies of his books. So I knew a little bit about it. But you know what? If I don't have a basic, I don't have a computer that I can type a program in and have a solution to a problem. So, and that was really what really impressed people at my club. Everybody would be looking over their shoulders, got this little board the size of a sheet of paper with only about 30 little $1 chips on it, and he's typing on a keyboard running BASIC. That was really impressive.
And the club you speak of is the Homebrew Club.
Yeah, Homebrew Computer Club.
You were a shy guy back then and still are, and as I recall, you didn't speak much during those clubs.
Correct. I didn't speak anywhere in life. Like, when I was in classes, I'd never raise a hand. I'd sit in the back. And in the Homebrew Computer Club, I'd sit in the back row of 500 people, and I never once raised my hand to speak, but I listened. All these Stanford academicians and ones from Berkeley and people that were relating this new low-cost computer to how it was going to affect people and society and make us be better education. We'd be better to communicate, post a notice, and 100 people could read it right away. You know, and they would know that where you're supposed to meet instead of some other place. And oh my gosh, I was so thrilled. And that a young kid would, you take in your own computer with a software programmed by your 10-year-old at home. You'd plop it on your desk at work. You'd type in the company's financial data, and it would pop out the results. I was so impressed. I was young and naive, and I thought, wow, the small individual person is going to be more powerful than the CFO. And these things, that's why I said, I've got to build a computer for all these people that want to do these great things.
Do you think that's still true, that in the sense of the infrastructure we have now, is the individual still powerful in that way?
Oh, no, that went away very quickly. What happened was, my idea was, I mean, it is certainly, it's a tool of our life. Like, what would you be without your car? What would you be without, you know, your pen and pencil and typewriter and whatever? But, what happened was, my idea was originally that people would learn to be a programmer and be a master of all their own solutions. And they would, you know, be able to have a problem and write a program to solve it. Everybody would learn to program. It was so easy to learn BASIC on these new machines. And right away, everybody started coming out with their own programs pre-made to do a database. A clumsy method, not exactly perfect for your task, but it could be adapted to use it. They'd come up with their own word processors and their own, all these different programs came out. You'd just buy other people's. But the spreadsheet shook things up. So it really became just better. I'll just get another program and I'll operate at a higher level for programming a spreadsheet, say.
Right, right. So in fact, the spreadsheet was an important thing in Apple's development.
Huge, in all of personal computers, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the Apple II, okay, you can load in cassette tapes and run little programs and balance a checkbook, maybe. All of a sudden, this program VisiCalc comes out, the first spreadsheet ever. A small businessman who's got a small business of his own walks into a computer store, and he sees this Apple II computer running VisiCalc, and now he can type in expenses and income, January, February, March, April, May, June, make a change in January, bleep, see it instantly in June. Oh my gosh, in half an hour, he's done more work than he could do in 10 years with pencil and paper. That's a sale. And they were buying solution. The complete solution was the hardware from Apple and the software from Personal Software. And buy the solution. Then they started buying more and more boards for better spreadsheets. And that was when our market shot up 10 times and made us such a hugely successful company. We're going to have a big successful IPO and all
right,
that.
Right. So that was the killer app then. What's the next killer app?
If you do, if you know, you'll make $1 million.
Well, that's why I'm asking you.
I don't know. Watson. Watson on my iPhone.
Watson.
Yeah, and that's going to happen.
Wow.
That'd be very cool. Speaking of iPhones, you don't have just one iPhone. You have multiple iPhones. Tell us what's in your backpack most of the time.
My backpack. People love to hear my technology stories, but I'm almost always carrying an AT&T and a Verizon iPhone. I have two AT&T iPhones because I lucked into an old grandfathered account for unlimited international data.
Great. Yes.
$64 a month. Unbelievable. My wife's got a couple of iPhones too, one for work, one for personal. And I have a couple of Android phones, so I'm comparing them. I'm going to get a Windows phone very soon, the Lumia 900 I'm looking for. So I'm always reading the gadget pages, and I want to try as much time as I have. And I've got a million other cellular devices, MiFis and Kindles and iPads and things like that.
You are one of the happiest guys I've ever met, and I admire that and celebrate that. He absolutely is. But I think you have an underlying philosophy of your happiness that I'd like to learn more about. Yeah. How do I become a happy wise?
Well, the problem is you have to think out your own clues to happiness when you're young. Like in your round, you know, your personality is shaping around maybe 16 to 20 years old. You're exploring the ways you're going to be. What are your important inside values and their secrets to you?
Right.
And mine were secret to me. And you know, a lot of it was A, being good, knowing that my ideas were good even if another person didn't agree with me. You don't ever have to have an argument. You think your way, I think mine, and I believe mine's right, you know, and I can walk away and I don't ever have to argue.
Right.
So non-conflict is a lot of what's gotten me happy in life, and that means also not making things so important. I'm going to be so upset if somebody loses an election or something like this. Very non-political, not caring about a lot of those things, because then you don't be upset all the time. What's the measure of life? How I ran my company and got this budget and did that and built these products and all that? Or is it going to be, I went around all day long on the street with no job, no home, and I was just laughing, telling jokes with my friends. Which would I rather be when I die? And I decided I'd rather be the guy having fun and laughing and, you know.
Sweet.
And so what, I was lucky that I had the computer talents. The computer talents, but in all my jobs, it was so important to me to have a lot of joking with your compatriots at work. You know,
if you could imagine yourself being born now, the age now that you were back in the Apple days, what could you imagine yourself doing?
I would think right away I'd be writing apps for the iPhone or some phone. Some phone, maybe an Android. That's probably it. Because I think that's the most, I don't know, exciting and open and so many things, so many millions of thoughts you can have that you can have solutions for. So I'd still be a programmer, I hope. Although I was mainly a hardware guy in my prior life, but hardware's a lot different now.
Software is the way to go, you're saying?
Well, you know, it was actually early on in Apple Faces when we came out with the Macintosh type computers, and PCs had DOS. And it turns out they had text command lines structure, and we had little moving around icons, and a picture that looked like a paint bucket would actually paint, and things that were intuitive. The difference was not in what chips you had, what memory chips you had, what processor chips, what input and output serial ports. The difference was in the software. So from then on, pretty much the difference between products, what you make your decision based on is largely software, and the other side is marketing and brand recognition.
Right, right. So, I mean, you revolutionized the industry with the Apple, and that was a different time and place, as you say. Here we are now, I mean, IBM's a big company, lots of other big companies like that. Any advice for how one can bring innovation like you embody to a large organization?
You know, every large organization has this problem, and A, things are slow, and you've got an engineer, oh my gosh, I got a new idea. If I had this other chip do that, or if I pulled this off, I could save something. It's very hard, it can be a hassle to make changes like that.
Right.
Software, we have allowance procedures in Apple, but it's I don't know. And how do you get the most out of a worker in the morning laying out the PC board for it? I mean, by hand. I mean, just not on a computer. And once I was done, I realized that I would have had, instead of 8 holes in the board,